Welcome to Pre-K Spot Talks. I am Melissa, your host and the founder of Pre-K Spot, the spot for early childhood educators to open up their teaching. I am your guide down the open-ended child-led teaching path, and together we will explore strategies and ideas so that you may open up your teaching to less stress, more engagement, and an overall joyful child-led classroom. Hey, hey, educator friends. We are in a brand new season of Pre-K Spot Talks. Welcome to Season 7, Episode 1. We are starting this season off with an interview, and here we go.
Welcome to this episode of Pre-K Spot Talks. We have Ziba from Kindergarten Cafe with us today. How are you doing, Ziba?
Just great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem. So we are going to chat a little bit about play and Ziba's play journey and a little bit of how she uses play in her kindergarten classroom. So tell me a little bit about you and, you know, where you teach and some fun facts.
So I'm in Massachusetts and I teach kindergarten and I've been teaching for 10 years now. And I have taught kindergarten through third grade. So I've taught all the lower elementary grades. Mm-hmm. Kindergarten is absolutely my favorite. But yeah, I'm early childhood. So in Massachusetts, that's pre-K through second license. Mm-hmm. Third grade was a COVID year that no one needed a license for, apparently. So yeah, I'm pre-K through second. Yeah. They just needed a body on a screen. Anyway, that was COVID. Yeah. So I'm pre-K through second, but I've taught kindergarten the longest. That's where my heart is. And yeah, Massachusetts.
Nice. All right. So I know that you are very social emotional based and you have some play background. Tell me a little bit about how you got started with play and a little bit about your play journey.
Well, you know, having my background in early childhood education, we're taught in undergrad and our licensing programs the value of learning through play and how to best utilize play and set up play for kids. And then being dropped in the elementary school setting, that is lost a lot because elementary education majors really do not learn this at all. Mm-hmm. And it's not a feature of elementary school classrooms, generally speaking. And so the administration also, because they have an elementary background or a curriculum background, they also do not know about this importance of play and how kids really learn through play. So all that being said, I learned about play and the value of it from undergrad, from my early childhood education background. But I've had to really advocate for play with the other kindergarten teachers at my school. So we've met together multiple times and really advocated for more professional learning on play, as well as getting time in our schedule for play, which is still something that we're advocating for all the time, because it's just not innate and it's not a given for the kindergarten classroom. And I'm hearing more and more from teachers about how it's being taken out of the schedule. The play spaces are going out of the classrooms and it just breaks my heart. So it's not a problem, I think, unique to me. I think it's a genuine kindergarten problem. And unfortunately, I think it's being passed down even some pre-K and preschools where they're getting rid of play and adding in more worksheets and sitting and doing work.
That is the fight. That is actually a huge reason why I do what I do with Pre-K Spot, because I know that is happening. While it doesn't happen in my school, it is happening across the country, across New York City, for sure. So I know you were talking about advocating. Can you talk a little bit about what you do to try to advocate for that?
Sure. Well, so power in numbers. So definitely it was a huge help that we met as a kindergarten team district wide and crafted a letter, and we worked with our union to help us. And we met with the superintendent and curriculum heads and just said, look, here is all this research that we have that's out there in the world that says play is valuable, that kids learn from play. And here's all the research. Here's why we should do it. And here's what we want. Here is exactly, like, it was important to have the plan in place of what it is that we want. Now, some of it that we want is, it's a very slow process. Right. Like obviously block scheduling where we have the same number of minutes per day in our schedule for literacy, math, science, as we do as a fifth grader does, that's going to make it hard to find time for play.
Of course.
And so there's advocating with the district of the value of play that helped us get professional development of play. It helped administrators get more understanding of how kids are learning through play. There was value in that. We did get some play on our schedule. But then there's also the shut your door and do what's best for kids philosophy. And I'm sort of ascribing to that more. More and more the longer that I teach, because while I'd love to see more system-wide change, it's just so hard, I think, when administrators, people making decision in the district, they don't have that background in early childhood education. And they really, you can throw research at them. They know, okay, mm-hmm. I get it. Yeah, play is valuable. I get it. But they want to see the data results mm-hmm. on test scores.
The systemic change is the hardest part. Of course, we have to keep fighting for it, but the systemic change is slow, like you said. Mm-hmm. And it is the hardest part. But, you know, we just keep fighting the fight.
Yeah.
But that's awesome. That's awesome that you keep doing that and that, you know, you're still doing what you know is best for your children. So, like you said, you are getting some blocks. Of course, there's the requirements. You have to meet the minutes. So you have so many minutes, right? Mm-hmm. You have so many minutes that you have to meet. What blocks do you get for play? Like, right? Do you have like a free play block? What have you gotten out of advocating for play in your classroom?
Yeah. So technically in our schedule, I think it's 15 or 30 minutes of play during mm-hmm. arrival time. So really, if the kids are on the later end, they don't get that full amount of time. Right. And I think it's just depending on the school, depending on the administrator, like in my school, we push past that and go beyond and sort of take away from other parts of our mm-hmm. schedule. And our kids are fine. Like our kids are meeting all the benchmarks. Mm-hmm. So no one's saying anything, right?
Right.
Because the kids are getting what they need. Because they really don't need the number of minutes that is assigned to them by the district. Now, what's interesting is in Massachusetts anyway, kindergarten is not required by the state. It's not a required right. grade level to attend. So there actually are no designated time on learning minutes by the state. There's just district level ones that they've created, which just match all the other grades.
Right.
But there's actually no required time on learning for kindergarten because it's not a required grade, which is bonkers, but that means we have some flexibility here. We can be creative. Mm-hmm. So that's like a long-term goal of like, hey, I'd like our schedule not to match a fifth grader's because that just developmentally makes no sense.
Right.
So we do get like 15 minutes technically, or 30 minutes, I think, technically. I tend to push it more to 45. Then we have special days like on Fridays. Some Fridays in the month, we get to go longer with play days and I'll go for an hour to an hour and 15 minutes or something if I can, depending on how the kids are doing. Then sometimes for science and social studies, we can push, that comes out at the end of the day. We can sometimes push the curriculum into the play. Mm-hmm. And those department heads have been very flexible with us about how to teach those content areas within play. So I think the big pushback that I feel like giving right now is the difference between playful learning and purposeful play.
Okay.
And the curriculum heads, I feel like oftentimes are like, yeah, play-based learning. That's great. They want playful learning. And there's nothing mm-hmm. wrong with teaching academics playfully. It's a great strategy. It's developmentally appropriate. Like in literacy, doing centers and doing games in the centers and hands-on learning and having them act things out and retelling stories. That's all great. Those are good strategies. That is playful learning.
Right.
And that's my been my shtick this whole year. That's great. That's playful learning, but that's not purposeful play. That's not letting kids choose what they want to play, how they want to play it, take lead in their play. And they need that time. They need that free choice time to just be. They need that unstructured time without mm-hmm. me telling them what to do and how to do it. To create their own learning, to create their own play. And that's where my pushback now is in advocating for play. It's like, mm-hmm. yeah, that playful learning is great, but they need that purposeful playtime, that unstructured free choice time as well.
Yeah. So that was going to be my question as I was listening to you sort of chat about it and talk about it was, are there ways that you're pushing the curriculum, right, to kind of squeeze in those little extra moments of play? Like, are you getting some more sort of playful learning, or are you able to squeeze in some like extra moments of, you know, maybe shifting the curriculum more towards play or things like that?
Yeah, absolutely. Whenever I can, we do. I mean, I'm a huge believer in like game-based learning for math. And like I said, in centers for literacy, adding in play components and things like that. And I think that's just good teaching for young children. But I just don't want to discount that time for them to just lead their own play and do exactly what they want.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Because I'm so glad you brought up the difference between that. Absolutely. Like playful learning should always be, at least in my opinion, right? I think we both agree on that. But there is a difference. There is a big difference. And even somebody sent me a DM the other day and she was like, I love that you're doing play and it's true play. And it's not just packaged, quote unquote, fake play. And not that I don't want to call other play fake play, but I think there's so many people that have an idea of play. And I think, you know, higher ups or the admins and things like this say they're doing play, but they're really just doing playful learning.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And right. And so I think they get that far and that's enough for them. Mm-hmm. Right. And I don't know where that comes, but whether that comes from maybe a misunderstanding of play or maybe just not wanting to go further or just getting to that surface level is enough, whatever that may be. But my newest thing lately has been trying to push play. Play is a deep, complex educational concept like any other educational concept.
Absolutely.
Just like the science of reading, just like any classroom management strategy, play is a complex educational strategy. And I think people need to understand it as much and take it seriously like that.
Yeah. I think the pushback or the hesitancy comes from this block scheduling, right? Like we have, like we want to show on a schedule that I'm teaching literacy 90 minutes every day. Mm-hmm. Now, if I do that playfully, great. I'm still teaching literacy and it shows up on my schedule 90 minutes. But if I think people would, they think people would freak out if they saw 45 minutes labeled play
right
on the schedule for kindergartners, when really that's exactly what they need.
Right.
And like you said, there it that is work, that is learning, that is deep and meaningful learning. It is probably the most important learning they'll do all day because they're constructing their knowledge themselves. They are putting all the things together that they've been learning and they're putting it into action and trying things out, experimenting and problem solving. Like they need that time. That is how kids learn. There's so much, there's just so much research out there that's the
right?
kind of learning that kids need. And I don't understand why we're still fighting this fight.
I, you know, that is one of the things that always sort of baffles me because people are literally choosing to ignore research, yet they're using research to push so many other things. And then now this whole thing that push away from the certain writing and reading things that are no longer good, right?
Yep.
But were pushed forward in the past because of research, apparently, right? But like now new research is coming out. And what's going to happen in the future? I'm not saying that these things are going to be disappearing then, but there was research backing that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's sort of this whole sort of, are we going to just continue to choose to ignore research or only see research that we want or what? When this research has been around for years and the people that I know that I always mention, like Stuart Brown and like Peter Gray, they are getting old, right? They're not going to be around forever. And we need to find new research and it's out there, but play just for some reason, they just do not want to take it seriously as a meaningful educational concept.
Yeah.
And even in pre-K, even then people like it's okay in pre-K, but even then, like you said before, it's sort of slipping away.
Well, the push down from first grade into kindergarten, is pushing down into pre-K. I mean, I hear about it and it breaks my heart and it's sad. And I think that as teachers for early childhood, especially, we know what's best for kids. We know what's developmentally appropriate. And part of our job, it seems like, is just always going to be advocating for what's best for kids, knowing this research, knowing that kids need to play to learn. and given some pushback.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things I always say is like, just make the learning known. Like if you, one of the things we're advocating is literally making the learning known. And I always, my bulletin boards are always like, look, here's how they learned their letters when they were, you know, today my kids, I taught them about pet shelters and pet stores because they were learning about pets. And then they built a pet adoption center and they labeled it. They made a sign. They asked me how to write adoption center. So I wrote it on the board for them so they could copy it. And they wrote it. And then one of my other kids out of the blue didn't even realize he could do it because he's new. He's only been in for a week. He wrote adopt store. And I was like, look at you go. He wrote adopt store.
And that's so much more meaningful than you sitting down and teaching a lesson on here's how we sound out words, right? Because especially in pre-K, like, yeah, they need some foundational skills when they get older. But like in pre-K, that they're so inspired and curious and excited. Like that's also, it's meaningful writing to them. It's not just writing to be learning how to write. It's writing with a purpose. And that's why people write. They have a purpose behind it.
Absolutely. And then the best part was like another kid came over and was like, what does that say? Right?
Print has meaning. One of the things that I really like to do at back to school night, where like when I have the parents come in, is I actually give them a little scavenger hunt to the different play areas and check off like when they found it. And in each play area, there's a matching thing where they match it to the benefit from that play area. Ooh. And then in the play area, I have a list of like dramatic play. These are all the things your kid is learning in this area. Because I think parents, when they see me updating them on play or the kids posting pictures of their play, I don't want that parents questioning what is my child learning in kindergarten. Mm-hmm. And so when I have them at curriculum night, I love to have them do that scavenger hunt and really learn like, oh, wow, they're really actually learning a lot just by playing with water in the water table. I didn't know that.
Oh, I love that. That's a really great idea.
And actually it's free. So I'll make sure to share the link with you.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, definitely. We'll put that in the show notes. I like to do something similar. I actually have the kids right at the very end of the day, take out a whole bunch of loose parts and just build with them and then leave them right on the table. And then I have the parents come in and play with the loose parts too. And then we just talk about how it feels and talk about why it's important and what the kids are getting out of it and what the parents get out of it. And kind of the same thing, like what the benefits are of just playing with these loose parts and like all the things that they learn from just
these materials. I love that idea. We're just starting to do more with loose parts and we've started like building up our collection and we got some professional development on it last year. So I might use that next year at curriculum night, have the loose parts out for the parents. I love it.
Yeah, it's so much fun. So the best part is when they walk in, I don't actually tell them what their kid did and whatever, because I don't even want them to know, but sometimes they can guess, right? Because they can just see if they see like child style in something. But sometimes I'd like to see if they can guess maybe what the kids built. Because the best part about loose parts is sometimes they build something, sometimes they don't, right? So sometimes you know if the kids built something, sometimes they'll tell you, sometimes they don't. So if you do know what the children built, or if there is a story behind it, and that's something you could do, you could ask them if you wanted to, and then you can have the parents come in and kind of guess and see if they can tell like what the kids did. And then you can have the parents build and the kids love it. Cause when they come in the next morning, they're like, oh, what did my mom do? Or they're like, oh my God, I can't believe the parents played too. And they love that little like connection.
Yeah. I like that a lot.
Yeah. It's super
That's funny. That's what they had us do at our professional development on loose parts was they just put them out and they were like build. And at first as adults, it's like, I feel like I have to create something. I don't know what I'm supposed to create. And that whole releasing of pressure and like, it's just freedom.
I mean, that's exactly it. And that's exactly what we talk about. And just those feelings, even the feelings that kids go through, or the fact that maybe kids don't even go through that. Kids go beyond that. And like parents can get to that point too. And then they can feel the freedom and like the openness and the creativity and then the, you know, all of that.
Yeah. Love it.
And that's what I'm doing for my Elevate Virtual is all about loose parts.
Oh, nice.
And STEAM and how it's important and how you can cross pre-K to second grade with it. And really the power of loose parts and how they can pretty much teach you anything.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So actually, tell me what your favorite loose part or play material or play item is. Or maybe like a go-to one. One that you can't not have in your class. One you have to have.
I mean, I just feel like I'm such a big fan of dramatic play that I have to have a dramatic play center, and I love changing it up and switching it up. As far as loose parts go, I just like collecting things that should be recycled and using those as loose parts. And so currently I was collecting a lot of was those like topper of the snack pouches, the applesauce packages. Like the kids
green
would be like,
ones, like the like helicopters.
They do. They also have the like round ones too. So I was collecting both. And the kids would know, they'd come up and be like, I finished a snack pack. Here you go.
Yeah.
But now I'm collecting marker tops and I'm like, how have I not seen this before? Like, why have I not been collecting marker tops? And
that's
so now
my
the
favorite
kids
one.
Yeah, my kids know now, like, okay, we'll bring Miss McGibbon the marker tops.
And then that's the best too, when kids are like, they can't find a marker top, like for a marker. I just go get it out of the loose parts.
Yeah.
And then that way you never, well, not never have a marker without a top, but like usually you have a marker with a top now. And then that way, like, it keeps them fresh because you have a giant pile of marker tops. Because even the other day, my kids were like, wait, but I can't find them. I was like, go look for one. They were like, what? And I was like, yeah, there's a whole bunch right there. And they were like, oh my gosh. All right. Since we're coming towards the end of the year, we always find the end of the year kind of controversial for pre-K to kindergarten teachers, right? So as a kindergarten teacher, can I ask you, do you prefer to have children entering kindergarten with some academic skill, or would you rather them come in with more sort of social, emotional, problem solving? What do you prefer as a kindergarten teacher?
So glad you asked and that we're talking about this. I'm like on a mission to tell preschool teachers and pre-K teachers that there is no academics that I want them to come in knowing. Please stop focusing on any academics that you think I want them to know. I am prepared to teach them knowing zero letters, knowing zero numbers. That is where we start in kindergarten, because some kids come in with no preschool experience. I don't expect any student to know any of that stuff. I would love that for them to recognize their name and be able to write their name.
Okay.
But beyond that, it's social emotional. And I can tell when kids go to programs that value the social emotional learning, because those are the kids that are independent, responsible, able to solve problems with peers. Those are the kids that don't need my help the first day of school up until now in March. Those are the kids that are problem solved, be independent, all that stuff. So I absolutely would focus more on social emotional skills. I want them to be, like I said, independent. Can they go to the bathroom on their own without needing my help zipping up their pants? Can they get their coat on for recess without needing my help to zip up? Can they regulate their body to sit for the beginning of the year? No more than 5 minute lesson, right? Like, we build up their stamina, but do they have that regulation to sit and listen to a story? Do they have that regulation to stop their body and listen to the directions and then go follow through with the directions?
Or like the understanding that when I say come to the carpet, come to the carpet, right? The understanding, like the understanding of how school works, right?
Yeah. And then also, like, socially, are they asking to share materials or play, or are they just grabbing from people, right? Like, obviously, I prefer, it's much easier for me if kids are not just grabbing from everyone.
Sure. I mean, I understand that some 5-year-olds are still going to be some grabbing, but they'll understand that maybe you do need to ask or wait or things like that.
Yeah. And obviously, kindergarten teachers are prepared to meet kids where they are. But I just want, I really want to get a message through to preschool and pre-K teachers that I'm not looking for them to know their letters.
Right.
I'm really not. Obviously, if you can do some basic introduction, like, cool, great. But like, yeah, the social emotional skills, that's what I really want. I can teach them their letters.
Great. I agree with you. See, I agree with you. I feel like within my classroom space, I'm going to give them some experiences with letters, right? We're going to like do some invitations that have letters attached. They're going to have their number experiences. We're going to do some fun activities that might have those involved, but I am not going to teach them those directly. Like, I'm not going to sit down and make sure that they know them, because they're going to learn them intuitively and integrated within the play that they do. But I'm going to teach them how to coexist with other people.
Yes, please.
I'm going to teach them how to coexist within a school community. Right. I'm going to teach them how to be a human and understand that they live within a space with other people, that there are 14 other children within the classroom that they have to wait and tap my arm and not scream my name 50 times unless there's blood or fire or somebody has a broken bone.
Mm-hmm.
And like understand that they can solve some problems on their own.
Yes.
They can open their snack on their own
mm-hmm.
and things like that.
Yeah. And I will say from experience, like the kids that come in knowing all their letters oftentimes have struggles in other areas, right? Mm-hmm. Just because they are strong in one area academically, like they're still going to have things to work on. And more often than not, it's social emotional.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the kids that come in not knowing letters, by December, they've caught up. Like I've mm-hmm. taught it to them. They've learned them, unless there's an underlying issue of why they're not learning letters, but they'll get there. They'll catch up. That's not the worry. It's social emotional.
I feel like I'm often explaining it to parents that, and you can tell me if this sounds like, or sounds like an experience. I feel like it's got to be tougher for children to try to learn both at the same time, their academics and their social emotional at the same time. Learn how to regulate your body and you're learning your academics, and their little brain trying to do both of those things at the same time has got to be very overwhelming and tiring. Where like if we focus really hard on their social emotional now, they can focus really on their academics in kindergarten. I don't know.
Yeah.
I feel like that's got a lot going on in kindergarten if they
have
to
I mean,
at the same time.
The way I talk about it is like they literally can't learn academics until they have a strong foundation with social emotional.
Uh-huh.
It's not even like that it's hard to do both at the same time. It's that they need that foundation of social emotional learning in order to regulate themselves.
Later.
Right. They need to be able to regulate themselves to sit on the rug and listen to the lesson. They need to be able to have executive function to follow directions, to be able to go to their seat and practice whatever we're doing. They need to have impulse control so that they're not interrupting their friends and bothering them while they're learning and that they're focused on what they're practicing. They need to be able to be independent and problem solve, because if their pen's not working and they're expected to be practicing writing, are they just going to sit there and not do anything the whole writing block, or are they going to solve that problem and go get a pencil or go find another pen?
Or ask for help,
right? Mm-hmm. Exactly. So they're not able to learn academics. I mean, we'll try, we'll do our best, but if they don't have that foundation, it's going to be really hard.
Right. They can't access it if they can't.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Absolutely. Awesome. Thank you so much for sharing that. We have you here. Why not ask a kindergarten teacher? We've got one right here.
I think a lot of this is what I'm saying about that push down too. I feel like pre-K preschool teachers are feeling like they should be teaching kids all their letters.
Absolutely.
And it's like a point of pride that all their kids are learning all their letters. I've talked to them myself. Like they're like, wow, I've taught my kids the letters. They know all their letters. I'm like, ooh.
Yeah, the pressure is there. It's absolutely like, there.
Don't do that. Like, don't spend your time on it. Like you said, embed it into what they're doing, embed it into their play, embed it into their, investigations. But that's what I'm here for. I have a whole curriculum on exactly how to teach them the letters, and we'll learn them all by December. Spend your time.
Right. That's
playing.
What you're supposed to do. That is what your job is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And like I said, kids come in to kindergarten at all different levels. Some of them are already reading second grade levels. Some of them were never in preschool, don't know how to write their name, count to 10. And we're able to teach them all.
Right. Because again, pre-K, preschool, it's not a requirement.
Mm-hmm.
And just like Massachusetts, New York, kindergarten is not a requirement either. Technically, you're not required to do school until first grade.
Yeah. Which I can't imagine a child going to first grade with no school experience.
I know. I can't imagine either. I mean, most of the time, most kids are going to school, at least by pre-K,
mm-hmm.
but there are those cases where, and especially now as we, New York City is having a major influx of migrant families.
Yeah.
We are now having students who have never been to school until kindergarten.
Yeah.
Even now some who entered first grade.
Sure.
With pretty much zero school experience.
And learning English on top of it.
And learning English on top of that. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Been crazy, but that's a whole other story. But that's awesome. So thanks, Ziva, for being here. So tell us where, people can find you and anything else you'd like to say.
Sure. Well, if there's any kindergarten teachers out there listening or anyone who's interested in kindergarten stuff or things that I have to say, I have a podcast out, the Kindergarten Cafe podcast. You can find it where you get your podcasts. I'm on Instagram at Kindergarten Cafe, and you can go to my website. They have all of the resources and some awesome freebies, like the one we mentioned, kindergartencafe.org.
All right, awesome. Thanks again for being here. And that's it for this episode. Until the next one, play on.